Welcome one and all on this day of days in which we are here to push the audio medium to the brink of, well, where it shouldn't probably be. We're here to talk about the greatest shots in cinematic history, but also like according to us, so not really.
Yeah, I can't imagine we've seen every great shot in cinema history.
I imagine I've seen almost none of them.
That's false. I feel like you've seen a bunch.
Overall, just relative to how percentages work, I bet I've seen very little of them. But I'm going to tell you anyway what my favorites are. And again, this is not a show that's on YouTube like better podcasts are. This one's only me on audio medium. So we're talking about pictures in an audio. I feel like I've spent the last few podcasts we've done apologizing for doing podcasts that are not meant for whatever. Okay, this is not a ranking. This is not a movie draft or like a movie draft that we've been doing. This is just an open conversation between you and me, boys, just about like, you know, if you were to be watching all your favorite movies and you paused it in any specific place, where are the ones where that stick out to you to be like, phew, that's pretty chill.
That was a great shot. Yeah, I've said that so many times in movies, and we'll go over a bunch of them today. But also, as a supplement to this, if you subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/HBOBOIZ, you'll be able to join our Discord, in which there we will indeed post the screen grabs of these shots that we're talking about in the general chat, I suppose we could do it in. And so at least you'll have some sort of reference should you like to subscribe. But I feel like most people will understand what shots we're talking about if you've seen movies.
Yeah, you can Google them. That's not a good thing to say to your audience.
Yeah, anyway. Just Google it.
I'm going to caveat this up top with one thing while I was trying to put this list together. And it's that I think a lot of the quote unquote greatest shots in cinematic history that that people put on lists all the time are silhouettes. They are there's a lighting source and there's a probably human being usually who is silhouetted in front or in back of said lighting source. The most, the one that comes to mind is the almost all of Blade Runner because it's all dusty. And they do it in Dune too because
they do.
The general, I don't know, what you, like the main color that the film is graded mostly is orange.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just easy for them to be like, dust, orange, silhouetted body. Do you like that? You like that, idiot?
You want me to add a lens flare? Here's a lens flare.
Boom. J.J. Abrams, Star Trek, baby. I'm lens flaring you.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with a silhouette shot. It does look very good and in the proper setting can be even great.
Yeah. I'm just saying that perhaps filmmakers sometimes use it as a crutch.
Sure. Yeah, like, absolutely.
It's sort of the same thing as the golden hour, you know, when the sun is setting and they're like, we got to shoot an entire movie at this time of day. In fact, I'm going to make the filming schedule of this 40,000 months long because we're only going to be shooting for a half hour each day. You'll get a lot of Marriott points staying while we shoot this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to say that of the movies that I've written down, there's only one of them that truly is a silhouette shot that you've described, which is, so I'm happy about that.
Well, what is it, dude?
It is from The Empire Strikes Back. It is the Luke and Darth Vader lightsaber duel on the top of the stairs. In fact, it is my phone screen background. So what I'm going to do right now at 6:51 p.m. on September 11th, never forget, I'm going to take a screenshot and post that to the Discord so you can see what I'm talking about.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, no, I'm looking at that shot right now. It is less egregious to me because...
Oh, for sure. It's a setting.
Yeah, the grading is mostly blue. To be fair, though, the stairs in that shot are orange.
Yeah. And
could you maybe walk the audience through a little bit of the... history of blue and orange in cinema and why every goddamn movie is either blue Or it's orange.
Well, let me tell you, the blue and orange dynamic just looks good. Now, I don't know if there's any underlying reason. There could very well be that I just don't know off the top of my head, but
I mean, it's warm and cool, right?
It looks good. It's a great contrast, and it's just appealing to the eye. And then when it's framed properly with a good subject, foreground, background, I mean, it just equates to just a beautiful looking, an appealing shot to look at.
I'll stay on Star Wars for a moment because there are a few.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Luke looking out over a desert at two setting suns. That one's pretty famous. I mean, the initial shot of the ship coming overhead, and where you're like, that's probably not even that big a ship. And then you're like, okay, it's still going. Oh boy, it's still going.
Yeah, that's the Super Star Destroyer, or was that the actual Death Star? I can't remember.
I know nothing about Star Wars.
Oh, understood.
But actually, the first one I want to talk about, and this is going to feel disjointed, which is purposeful. And when you say something's purposeful, that makes it okay. So I want to talk about one of the end shots of E.T. And you know what I know. You know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Right? The little boy, he's on a bike. E.T., the extraterrestrial, is in the front of that bike with a blanket over his head. And it turns out E.T., he can make things fly. And they go in front of the moon. I remember seeing that shot when I was a little child.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of one of the first times where I got chills. They're multiplying. Sure. And about watching a movie. I just didn't know film could do that. I didn't know it could make you feel that way. And there are a few shots in E.T. The one that also sticks out is like when they're in the weird tube with all the government.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Oddly enough, that shot, very orange. The shot I'm talking about in front of the moon, very blue.
Very blue, yeah, weirdly enough. And that actually is also the logo for Amblin Entertainment.
Amblin. I love Amblin every time I see it. Amblin. It's because of that. It's because it's just fun.
Yeah, it just reminds you of a nostalgic time of better, you know, just a better time.
Better time, Amblin. You could talk about, I think, 5 to 10 different shots from 2001. I don't know how long I want to chill there, but I mean,
well, let's settle in there for at least one
in the tourney thing, right? Or perhaps the shot used or shot in the reflection of Hal with where they use that two-way mirror. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
Good.
Yeah. So staying on with also the Steven Spielberg train with E.T., Jurassic Park has one of the most iconic ending scenes that it has been immortalized in many, you know, statuesque things, in photos, all mediums. It is when the T-Rex is roaring and the banner falls in front of him where it says dinosaurs rule the earth. And that scene, oh, just that gives me, when he throws, she again, throws the Velociraptor into the side, murders it, and just lets out a big, great big roar, and the banner falls, and it's just absolutely perfect. And it actually wasn't even planned to happen that way. It just happened during filming, and they kept it, which is lovely. I love that. Happy mistakes.
That's lit. Yeah, that is the most famous one from the movie. Although my favorite shot from that movie is when the Apatosauri are peeking up above the tree line.
Sure.
And the two children plus Sam Neill are just kind of chilling in a tree. And the last Apatosaurus comes up. It's like right before the last Apatosaurus comes up and sneezes on them, which is just a hilarious moment. But it's that one shot where all of them are in the distance. And
and they're like honking.
Yeah. I love the description of honking. Yeah.
It's honking.
Them and a Mercedes down the street that's had a car alarm going off for the last hour. Same thing.
you know, the older movies, not necessarily an old movie, but definitely a movie of the 90s and early 2000s era, is The Truman Show. And this one I had forgotten about. I looked up a kind of a just lists of well-framed shots in movies over the past 30 or 40 years. And this one showed up and I didn't think about it. And I feel dumb about it. And it just very immediately went to the top of my list, which was the shot at the very, very end when Truman hits the wall, the fake sky wall, with his boat, and he climbs up the stairs. It's like a very famous shot from that movie, and he's climbing, you know, hovering stairs, invisible stairs, on the backdrop of the wall, and then he walks through the door of the assumable giant dome studio. And that shot was really great too, because it was a combination of him realizing his life was entirely a lie and he is now in explore mode and almost like the fight or flight mode. Just what is outside of what I know. And it was just a very cool shot to a very cool scene.
If I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that movie just in general was like super ahead of its time. And Jim Carrey with just an excellent, more serious performance, although there was a bunch of comedy in that as well. Yeah, just one of my favorite movies from that era, absolutely.
Yeah, and to bring us down, but also stay on Spielberg a little bit, I want to talk about the Schindler's List.
Oh.
I mean, there's one particular shot that I think is the most famous, which is the little girl in the red coat, the only color that has been shown for the entire movie.
Yep.
And that's just sad, because what's going to happen to that little girl? Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bummer, because that movie is a bummer overall, but it's just something that for the whole movie, being in black and white, and when movies kind of aren't anymore,
yeah,
and yearning for color, yearning for hope,
sure,
yearning for anything but the demise of the morality of man. And you just see a tinge of red, and it's on a little girl who's just walking by herself. And you think to yourself, what are you doing by yourself, little girl? Oh, God.
Oh, no. Well, you said, you know, movies in black and white that we really don't see anymore. But very recently, we actually did see a very intentionally filmed movie in black and white in The Lighthouse. And this was actually one of my top ones as well, and it's very specific. It's not one scene, it's actually quite a few scenes in the movie. It's where Willem Dafoe and, remind me of his name, my God, Robert Pattinson, sure, and Willem Dafoe are sitting at the table, and they're only illuminated by a single lantern in the middle of the table. And I went to school for film production and video recording and all that good stuff. I know. So, like, I really, really appreciate this, and I'm sure the audience does as well. But I watched the behind the scenes of this movie, and it was fascinating. They truly shot it on 35mm black and white film. And in order to get good light and 35mm black and white film, you have to have it really, really freaking bright. And so that scene is actually quite dark, because it's only one light in the middle of the table, but it had to be incredibly bright to actually capture it on film. So Willem Dafoe and Robbie Patty had been said, like, yeah, we were like being blinded by this really bright light in the middle of the table. But in the movie, it just looks like a standard lantern. It's just wonderful movie magic. It's a beautifully shot movie. It may not be everyone's cup of tea. It was a super weird movie, but sure, the cinematography in that movie was really good. There are a lot of really great shots in that movie, but that one scene, it was very captivating when I learned the behind the scenes details of it anyway.
Yeah, really cool shots, banging a lighthouse. Anyway.
Yeah, no, not a lighthouse. A mermaid or something. Oh, no, he did bang a lighthouse, I guess.
Yeah, he sort of did bang a lighthouse.
He sort of did.
I want to talk for one moment about The Dark Knight. I think there's a lot of shots you could take from The Dark Knight.
I bet you I know which one you're going to say, too.
Yeah, well, one is the initial opening scene of Behind the Joker, but mainly the one I want to talk about is Heath Ledger's the Joker hanging out of the cop car
with the
wind in his hair.
Gosh, beautiful scene.
I learned today that there were 180 PAs on The Dark Knight.
Seriously.
Over 1,000 radios. And there was one PA whose only job it was to hand out the radios every day, writing down the serial number as he handed out more than 1,000 radios. And I was like, that sounds like a nightmare.
Oh my God. Gosh, yeah, but I mean, hey, it paid off. Arguably one of the better, you know, dark comic book based action movies of our time, The Dark Knight. And people say, oh, it's a little overrated. It's really only as good, or people only think
who
it's
says
as
that?
Because, well, people only hold it in high regard because Heath Ledger died, and like that was his last movie where he was really big in it. And
yeah,
I don't agree with that.
No,
and that
go
movie
watch
was.
It.
It was so good. It was so expertly done.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, those, I don't know. That just, that registers as cynical to me.
Oh,
rather
for
than,
sure.
Because I don't like something. I don't know. I'm saying I'm the one. How,
you hate everything.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say the irony of me, the person who sips on the most haterade known to man. I want to go back in time, though, and discuss another shot that I really love, which is when the crew comes around the corner in The Wizard of Oz and sees the Emerald Castle for the first time.
Yeah.
That's another one where it's a little different from Shawshank. Schindler's List. It's a little different from Schindler's List, but it does play off the same trope of, look, it's going to be in black and white. Hey, or this is how much color is possible, actually.
Right.
And it was shown at a time where I don't think anything on screen had ever been that vibrant. And I bet it blew people's minds when it happened.
Oh, I'm sure. And even now, if you go back and rewatch The Wizard of Oz in like the 4K HDR Blu-ray on like a really good TV, those colors, I mean, they color enhance it so hard, but it's like incredibly well done. It doesn't look fake. It doesn't look cheesy. It looks mystical and magical, and it looks so, so good even now. I mean, almost 100. You were approaching 100 years of that movie, which is wild.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
I know.
It's a lot like, you know, when Instagram first came out and everyone was like, let's just turn up the HDR on every photo that's
terrible.
Ever existed.
Terrible. Lo-fi.
I'm a photographer and I'm an artist.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I actually want to go back to a director we already talked about, which is Christopher Nolan.
Okay.
Now, Christopher Nolan, you could put 10 minimum shots from his movies on this list, but I want to touch on this one very specifically, and it is Interstellar. And there's a scene where they're approaching the black hole Gargantua, and the tiny spaceship is approaching the black hole, which we now know, after many scientists have studied it, is the closest representation of an actual black hole that we can record on film. And well, maybe not record on film, but create for a movie. And I don't remember the stats of it, but the amount of render time it took to create this interpretation of a black hole was immense and expensive. But the shot that comes out of it, and again, this was another movie that was filmed in 70mm IMAX, and the CGI stuff was obviously rendered for 70mm IMAX. It is massive. It is colorful. It is sharp as a tack. It's beautifully done. And just another, Christopher Nolan just is so, so good at creating these movies that are larger than life, truly larger than life. And Interstellar, I think a lot of people will agree, Interstellar, one of the most visually appealing movies of our time, for sure.
100%. I'll throw in the top spinning at the end of Inception.
Yep. Sure. Yep, that was great. Inception in general, too, had a bunch of really excellently framed shots, excellent just shots in general, whether it was CGI or practical effects. You know, the city crumbling on itself was like really intense. The his dream world, like it was so like mysterious and, you know, I mean, dreamy, very intentionally. And yeah, just really great.
Okay, and now because I'm here, we have to talk about Lord of the Rings for like 3 minutes.
I assumed.
Yeah, so, I mean, geez. I'll start with look to the east on the fifth day and the Rohirrim riding down straight towards the Orichai and Helm's Deep with Gandalf the White's white light just shining brightly, and all those horse people murdering those Orichai, which is pretty sweet. sort of actually one of my favorite moments in cinema history. But I think one or two more shots I want to talk about, which is one, Frodo looking at the ring for the first time in the elvish scripture, like in orange, reflecting off his whole face. That is pretty sick. And then obviously I think I mean it's the eagles at the end of Return of the King coming through the clouds, picking up Frodo and Samwise Gamgee, and Gandalf's on the eagles, and they're solving all the problems, like I don't know, like how to get off of an active volcano. But it's just, you can tell when a filmmaker is like, and here next, what we're going to do is a painting.
Right, right, right. And you know what? I'm surprised, unless this was included and I just don't understand the references, because again, you are a much more Lord of the Rings fan than I am. But the scene where Gandalf is hanging off the edge of the cliff and he goes, "Fly, you fools." Like that scene, I remember that quite vividly as a shot.
Oh yeah, I mean him staring down the Balrog at all, yeah. Or maybe even the fight against the Balrog, even.
Yeah.
So, I mean, gosh, there are just so many. Sam carrying Frodo up the mountain. Every time the lighting of the beacons, which is my favorite scene in cinematic history. But I don't know, just take one of the shots from that one. That was probably good. Any ones that you're like, hey, did you know mountains were in New Zealand? Now you do. What do you got next, my bud?
So my next one, and actually I'm going to rope these three movies together because it's all from the same director. And I just want to touch on them very quickly. We don't have to go into crazy detail. We're obviously going to post the images. But it's going to be by my favorite director of all time, Quentin Tarantino. Number one, right off the bat, Inglourious Basterds. And you know it well, Ryan. We've talked about this scene many times. It's a scene where you discover that there are people underneath the floorboards of where Colonel Hans Landa is interrogating the French farmer man who is hiding Jewish people under his floors. The scene, it's underlit, the floor, to their eyes, it's stark blue, deep blue eyes and a black floorboard as it zooms out, and the rack focus is freaking killer. It just looks so good, and it just adds this level of tension that wasn't there and immediately was there when you realize what's happening. And I'll never forget watching that movie in the theaters for the first time. I was with my dad. I might have said this before. After that first scene, we both looked at each other and said, if this doesn't win something, if he doesn't win best supporting actor for this role, that would be insane. And sure enough, it went on to win awards. The second scene from a Tarantino movie is The Hateful Eight, the opening sequence montage of the landscapes of Montana and the Midwest in the wintertime. Just gorgeous film recorded, again, recorded in 70 millimeter film, not IMAX film, true 70 millimeter film, and released in 70 millimeter. I was actually lucky enough to actually see it in 70 millimeter on a 70 millimeter projector in Providence, not
say
the same
70
IMAX.
Millimeter again.
70 millimeter. But, okay. But that's like a big piece of that movie and how good it looked in the theaters. So that one, the opening sequences, and then Reservoir Dogs, one very specific scene where Mr. Pink and Mr. White have realized that they're not on the same team anymore, and it's Steve Buscemi and Harvey Keitel, and Harvey Keitel is standing, pointing his gun down to Steve Buscemi, who's on the floor, pointing his gun up. That scene, it lives in my brain rent-free.
Sure, yeah. You should honestly just open up a mortgage and start paying it.
Yeah.
You know that that shot in Nightmare Before Christmas where Jack Skellington goes, "She's somewhere deep inside
yes.
of these bones."
Is with that sound exactly?
Begins to grow. That part,
hey, go on, keep going.
I don't I'll look up more of the words and do it for it, but you know, Jack Skellington, that lanky motherfucker, and he's just sort of trouncing down a neat claymation mountain in front of, oh my god, this is a silhouette. Oh dang,
it's a silhouette, but it's a claymation silhouette, so it's not quite the same.
That's true. That's always different. And so it's better, and it's fine.
That, I'm surprised I didn't come across that one at all, because that really is an iconic like scene from that movie, is the curly mountain and the moon behind yeah. it, for sure.
It is a very curly mountain. I also want to now go to The Matrix. There are a few in The Matrix. The one that people point out all the time is Matrix 1. When they're picking up Keanu Reeves, there's rain coming down. They're under a bridge.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
That's the one that they bring up a lot of the time. But the one I want to talk about is in The Matrix 3, when they're in the Nebuchadnezzar going towards the robot city. And for one moment, they go yes. above the clouds.
Oh, that's great. That's a great
and,
one.
Keanu Reeves is blind, but he's just like, oh, I bet it rips out there. It feels like it rips.
Yeah, The Matrix, I mean, also had all that bullet time stuff, too. That was like the newest technology at the time, where Keanu Reeves was doing his bendy stuff, and there was like 100 cameras around him. Like, that scene was very cinematic and way ahead of its time. And, a lot of movies have copied that even to today, and it wouldn't have been as dominant as it was if it hadn't been for The Matrix. So, yeah, I mean, The Matrix was setting bars for cinematography in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it's also the same thing we were just talking about, right? Like, the reason that's shot when the ship goes above the clouds and you actually get to see the sky and the sun rather than just darkness.
Yeah.
The reason it's cool is because of contrast. We have spent three movies in this artificial world and in the real world, which is weirdly underground. Everything is green. Everything is very, very green. They have graded the whole movie green unless you're inside the Matrix, at which time it is the regular, just like slightly tinted yellow that people put on movies to make it look normal. But when you go above the clouds, you get blues, you get like a dark, like Bob Ross would take black and put like blue in it and also brown, you know, like phalo blue, and yep. And maybe some titanium white.
Perhaps. Happy accidents, Ryan.
Happy accidents. And then after he uses the brush, beat the devil out of it. So, God, I love that stuff. But the point is, like, there are so many, the color palette widens to more than three for the first time in 7 hours. And you're, and it's just the dopamine hit.
Oh, yeah.
It's good, is what I'm saying.
It's great. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
So another one that I came across too, and I just remembered from seeing it in the theater, was The Revenant.
The
Revenant, and again, not one particular scene. It was a collection of scenes throughout that whole movie. It was so beautiful, man. That was such a beautifully shot movie, for especially for landscapes. Just, I mean, tons of really wide shots that really show you the scale of the setting that these people are in. And to find out that Leo was actually like out in the middle of these scenes for real when they shot it was a very cool detail, but just really excellent contrast color grading and just beautifully framed landscape shots for The Revenant. I mean, among the really cool details of a bear mauling him, the movie was beautiful.
Well, you gotta have a bear maul you.
Of course.
You gotta have a bear tearing you up from the inside. There are no like honorable mentions, but I feel like it falls into this category. Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey lying on the ice in Eternal, Spotless.
Yeah, Eternal Mind. Sunshine and the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, you nailed it. Sure. And I got it too. Every Wes Anderson movie, shot of every Wes Anderson movie, just the way he just picks color palettes.
Yeah, the Grand Budapest Hotel, right?
Yes.
Like, yeah, there's that one was very shot. Iconic.
There's one particular shot in the Grand Budapest Hotel where they're in an elevator and it's mostly red, but then splashes of purple. He just, whenever, it's just something you don't see every day anymore, especially in movies where people are going for realism. When you go for like sharp contrasting colors that have very bold lines, it's a stylistic choice that I think there is some fatigue built in, but you know where there isn't fatigue? When you just see a picture of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wes Anderson's color grading is wild. Did you see that movie Asteroid City?
Oh yeah. I really I mean, yes.
It was just like all these pastel colors and it was so wild for my eyes to watch.
Yeah, it's just not like any other AAA movie that comes out, right?
Right.
Like, he's just doing his own thing. Where I feel like there are other directors who are like, gosh dang it, I wish I could do just colors.
Yeah.
But now if I do it, they'll just be like, eh. Who are you, Wes Anderson?
You're just copying him.
You're a copy yourself.
Well, I do have one more on my list that I actually wrote down, and it was James Bond 007 and Skyfall. Skyfall was, I think, one of the early movies that used the Red One cameras for like a big budget broadcast movie. But specifically the shot of, and it combines the silhouette shot with a beautifully lit slash of light across his face that illuminates his eyes, but it's like it's not just that, it's so contrasty and the color is really good even in that small area, because Daniel Craig, you know, he's a perfect man, so he has blue eyes, and yeah, it's just beautifully shot. The bokeh is amazing, and then a ton of other silhouette shots in that movie, all of the night stuff when the Skyfall house was on fire looked unbelievable. Just everything was so saturated with orange, as we said earlier, and man, did it look good.
Yeah. I'm gonna run through a few here in a moment, but before I do, I do want to just spend a bit of time on animated movies.
Okay. So, yeah
I mean, there are a few shots in animated movies that could go on this impromptu list, but like the shot of Mulan being chased down the mountain.
Oh yeah.
And There are so many. But like also, Pixar movies are chock full.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing moments put on screen. And my favorite one is, can you guess what it is?
Give me the movie.
Coco.
Oh, yeah. It's the shot of the afterlife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Crossing the
City
the
of the Dead.
City of the Dead. That's right. Yeah.
Just, do you recall, there was like a trivia question on like how long that shot took to render?
I mean, days.
Months
it,
even.
Yeah. It, like, I remember seeing somewhere that it was like thousands of layers or thousands of, maybe even millions or hundreds of thousands of layers.
Whatever, and, whatever number gets you going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you say a billion, man. Let's just say it.
It's billions.
It's a billion. Yeah, that's great. I remember seeing that one again in theaters, and I saw that in Cinemark's XD, and like the colors of that is really excellent. And yeah, it holds up. It really holds up.
I'll just one off a few. Sure. Fight Club, into Fight Club.
Oh yeah,
out
yeah,
onto
yeah.
the city yep. exploding. You met me at a very weird time in my life.
Yep.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. The first time Johnny Depp turns around and it's in the car. In fact, you know, it's sort of lame these days, but when GoPros first became a thing, putting them on the center back of cars was really cool. I remember a very specific shot in Ocean's 11 where George Clooney and Brad Pitt are driving and it goes around a corner, but because it's completely centered on the car, you just follow it right down the line, which has always felt very cool to me.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't many innovations in cinema anymore, right?
No, not so much anymore.
We've had cameras for too long. And so anytime anything new happens, it is that Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, sitting forward and pointing at the screen like, oh, what is that? What is that?
Well, speaking of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there was actually quite a few scenes in that movie, too, because it was kind of paying homage to Hollywood movies. And so, of course, they, you know, filmed some great shots for that movie.
I started off this movie and this whole thing kind of putting down Blade Runner, but I will say the new Blade Runner with Ana de Armas sure. as a giant hologram in the sky, yeah. like yeah. going to that shot is so from the one from the side.
Yes, I know exactly which one you're talking about. Yep. Only reason why I didn't comment on it is because I haven't seen the new one yet.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. But like that's what I'm talking about, right? Oh, Across the Spider-Verse. Half of that movie should be on this list. Sure. But like that's what I'm talking about where I just brought up that shot from Blade Runner and you're like, "Oh yeah, haven't seen the movie, know exactly what you're talking about."
Yeah, right. It's the most marketed shot of that movie.
And then like I wish James was here because there are some I just haven't seen any Japanese movies, but Spirited Away, like that's another thing. Like I haven't watched Spirited Away. Mm. I know that movie is beautiful.
Yeah, and Akira too.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like half of WALL-E. Gosh, I diggity. I love all of that as well.
Well, that's all I had written down.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say: the best shot movie of all time, the Lego Movie. Thanks for joining us here as the HBO boys. As Adam said up top. We've been posting these in the general chat of the Patreon. The way you get that, or not the Patreon, the Discord, but you get to be on the Discord through the Patreon because it's like only $1. Also, Adam says people's names at the end, which he's going to do like right now.
Yeah, so we'd like to thank our current patrons, Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, Howdy Dream Cowboys, ooh, Chris Wood, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Susan, Buffalo Pizzle, C. Fritz, and Filet Mignon number one. And thank
wait,
you,
wait, 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 wait.
Yeah.
D-Day, Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, dude.
Okay, keep going.
The shot with Matt Damon turning old.
Iconic. Dude, get out of here with
iconic.
That.
Iconic. Or Tom Hanks holding the pistol shooting at the tank. All right, I'm done. Thank you again for Brent Ginn for being our $5 a month tier patron. As you can see, we could probably do a whole second episode for this one.
Avatar is not a good movie, but Avatar, though. I mean, there's a few moments in that. Oh my God.
First movie. There was some good stuff in there. And Titanic. James Cameron,
Titanic. Terminator.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. We should revisit this.
This is the meme of just dudes sitting around on a couch naming old basketball players, and ours are just movies that have good shots in them.
Yeah.
Their Marcus Camby is our, you know, the Joker has some good ones. Elemental.
Sure did. Yeah, we're definitely going to have to come back to this and talk about it at length.
The new Avatar movie.
Yeah.
Going to the Firelands in that one. No, not the second one. The third one.
Sure.
You know what that's going to be? Blue and orange, baby.
It's going to be blue and orange. Yeah, I mean, it's blue people in the fire of orange.
Yeah, that's what I'm describing.
It's unreal. All right. Thank you again. Please follow us on our social medias at the HBO Boys or the HBO Boys BOIZ pod, and get at me on Threads. I post on Threads on there a lot. Instagram, TikTok, follow, subscribe, like, share. We really appreciate it. And, you know, give us suggestions if there's anything that you'd like us to cover. We have coming up The Penguin. We're going to be doing the full episode by episode recap of that show as it's airing. And what's the other show we're doing, Ryan? There's another one in there.
Are you sure?
Maybe not. I don't know.
All right. I think you jumped the gun there.
I jumped the gun. There is something else in there I know we were going to talk about, but I can't remember what. Oh, Severance is coming.
Oh, yeah. Severance in January. That's true. The movie Drive, by the way, a bunch of them.
1917, dude. 1917, tons of them.
I mean, when you're doing a continuous shot. The Martian, where they're behind him far, and then when he's saying, like, I go outside and just look at the dunes because it's all I have because I'm going to die.
Honestly, we kind of failed at this list.
There are just so many more.
There are so many more, and we should absolutely revisit this and do another one just expanding on this. I'm going to keep my list so I don't repeat any.
This is going to be the time where about an hour from now, I'm going to be eating and I'm going to be like, God damn it.
There's four more I just thought of.
Yeah, ones that are so obvious that people are screaming while they listen to this. And I just am not currently remembering. Okay, the end of Transformers when right before the Linkin Park hits.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.